every legal system has to have a mechanism for change. And I think that at least there are two obvious reasons why that has to be so. Number one is that if a legal system has no mechanism for change, it will quickly be rendered obsolete. In effect, embodied in Chazal's words, "El ha-shofet asher yeh bayamim ha-heim, ein lecha shofet ela shebiyamecha." And the second, since there is going to be change, that's inevitable, a legal system benefits from the ability to control the change as well. I think that when you look, generally speaking, at how change takes place, there are really two sort of avenues in which it occurs. The first one is through legislators, through actually legislative change. And the second, I'm not sure there is such a word, but if we could use the term through legislees, through the people who are affected by the law, who in effect are really the source of law. To borrow Rashbam's notion that Dina the Malchus Adina is binding only because the people, the nation decides that they are willing to be bound by these laws, that's what makes it binding. So sometimes legal change in effect comes from the bottom up. Halacha in this regard is no different. There are mechanisms for change in halacha, both that are reflected in terms of formal procedures, which I'm going to focus on most of my energies on, and obviously there are also bottom-up mechanisms as well. The famous expression that minag oker halacha or okef halacha, that often communal practice carries the weight of law and sometimes supersedes what we typically think of law. So what I wanted to spend most of this year this morning focusing on is the formal mechanisms for change, and then I want to take a few minutes at the end of this year to speak about perhaps what's the more important topic to us, but the one on which very little has been written, which is why exactly is the Talmud Bavli binding? And these two topics, there is a connection between them, and certainly in discussing why we consider the Bavli binding, one has to be aware of how Chazal reviewed the general issues of legal change. The earliest source that I'm aware of in Chazal that deals with the question of legislative or legal change is the Mishnah in Adrios. This Mishnah, which is the first source, so the Mishnah, following on the heels of three disputes between Shammai and Hillel, where both opinions were rejected in favor of the Chachamim's third opinion, so the Mishnah asks a very simple question. Which could be asked about Mishnah and Chazal in general. If halacha follows majority opinion, so why is it that we bother to mention minority opinions? What function do they fulfill? So the Mishnah here presents two different views. The first one is she'emira based in es divrei hayochid v'yismo halav. There's something grammatically difficult here. She'ein based in yachal levatal divrei based in chaver ashiyeh gadol mimenu b'chacham of avinyan. So the Mishnah says that something about a minority opinion, that if based in sees a minority opinion, and v'yismo chalav, the vav is very difficult here. The writer doesn't have the gears that have this vav, and that would make the reading of the Mishnah very simple. But forgetting about exactly what the first line means, the Mishnah says something about the minority opinion is significant because a Beis Din cannot overrule a previous Beis Din unless it is greater in Chachma and Minyan. The Mishnah continues, Hayagadol mimenu b'chachma avalo b'minyan, b'minyan avalo b'chachma, eni yachol levatal dvarav ashiyeh gadol mimenu b'chachma b'minyan. Now, I'm not particularly interested in defining or exploring what does it mean gadol b'chachma b'minyan. Chachma seems somewhat obvious, which would be that if it's greater and somehow in its knowledge and its wisdom, obviously the mere formulation of the Mishnah contradicts the very popular notion of Yuridas Hadoros, because otherwise it should be inconceivable that any Beis Din should overturn the ruling of another Beis Din. Presumably the Beis Din's ruling that it wants to overturn is earlier, and if it is later, it must be of lesser stature. So that's apparently, the Mishnah assumes, is not so. But Gadol Meminyan is even trickier, obviously, because generally speaking, a Sanhedrin is comprised of 71 judges, and every Sanhedrin is comprised of 71 judges. I would go a step further in the technical aspects. It's very clear that in terms of Gadol B'chachma Meminyan, it most certainly does not require Gadol, but it requires Shaveh. There will be situations, I think it's clear, that Chachma being Shaveh would be sufficient. But of course that can't be the case for Minyan, because every Beis Din then would be Shavah B'Minyan. So I'm not particularly interested in what the Gadol B'Minyan case is, but clearly a Beis Din of lesser stature cannot overturn the ruling or the legislation of an earlier Beis Din.
Is there a criteria for the establishment of Gadol v'Chochma?
No, they don't. Nobody, nobody really lays that out in any clear fashion.
So how do we know?
An interesting question. I don't know. I think that sometimes, you know, look. Sometimes we look at, you compare Rishonim. You study Halacha and study Beis Yosef, so you know that there are, have, you know, there are people who bat in the middle of the lineup, you know, third spot and fourth spot, and there are people who bat at the bottom of the order. Now, I don't really know if you met them, you would say, oh, he's so much smarter than the other. But sometimes we have a sense. You have a sense of a hierarchy in terms of who's Gadol v'Chochma. Not necessarily, again, how, you know, if they took an IQ test, but in the sense of the halachic process. But beyond that, how in the time there was a Sanhedrin, I have no idea how they determined, how they decided, you know, that they were Gadol v'Chochma or not. But let's, again, let's leave that, let's assume there's some mechanism for deciding that. Okay, so now that's what the Mishnah says. There is another opinion that's mentioned in the Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda. It's the follow-up to this Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says the reason why the minority opinion is mentioned is in case somebody later is confused about the halacha and they thought the halacha was X, someone can say to them, oh yeah, that was the minority opinion that was rejected. So the Mishnah preserves both majority and minority opinion so that in case the minority opinion sticks its head out somewhere, we can sort of chop it off by saying, yes, we know about that, that's been dismissed already, we can ignore that. Now, there is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid here, as to what the Mishnah, what's this business about she'im yireh beis din es divrei hayochid v'yismoch halav. So the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayis writes the following. So source number 3. The Rambam writes, Chavanas halacha zo, shim hoya based in shekvar osa kedas yochid, lo yuchal based in acher lachlok olav v'kach, v'lipsok es hadin kedas hameruvin. If, in fact, the Rambam says, the Mishnah is telling you the following, that if an earlier Beis Din that was greater b'chachma of a minyan adopted a minority opinion, a later Beis Din cannot, that is of lesser stature, cannot overturn that decision even to follow the majority opinion. What was once the majority opinion that the earlier Beis Din has ruled against is basically dismissed, and no Beis Din can adopt that majority opinion later unless it's Gadol b'chachma of a minyan. So that's
in a particular case or in general?
Generally speaking. You mean, in other words, if you're talking about a case where they need to make a one-time exception, that probably falls under a different category, which is, you know, of Horasha Lemigdar Milsa, or we might even call it based in Makin V'Onshin Shalom Aradin, Avalo Lavra de Rei Torah. But in terms of being able to legislate something that falls under, you know, in direct conflict with that, as a matter of principle, no. I might add as an aside, I wasn't going to talk about this, but even though we assume, you know, it's one of the issues that comes up is the Amoraim don't argue on the Tanaim, which is often, that's what people present, and that's the formal rules, and everybody who learns Gemara knows that rule. The reality is that Amoraim always frequently argue on the Tanaim, but they do it through interpretation. In other words, you have a Mishnah that says X, and the Amoraim come along, and by interpretation, they narrow the scope of the Mishnah to case Y. So, in the sort of the reverse of your question, you have many situations where the earlier Beis Din's rule becomes the specific case, and that's binding. But the general case then proves to be that, you know, they overturn. But it's never, it's generally speaking, never directly head on. It's through interpretation. So that's the Rambam's opinion. The Ravid takes a much more, I guess you could call it a flexible opinion. And the Ravid, it's quoted by the Tosfos Yontif, does not have the Girsa of Vav. And if you look in source 4, the Tosfos Yontif quotes the Ravid. He says, Nusach acher yismoch alav, v'hi nuschas haravid, shekach pireh, im yireh lebeis din ha'achron, halacha kedivrei hayachid, yismoch alav. Kelomar yikva halacha kamoso, and he goes on to cite some precedent. So here the Ravid understands that there's a tremendous degree of flexibility afforded to a later Beis Din in the following sense. If the opinion of the earlier Beis Din was essentially unanimous, there was no minority opinion, or if either the Beis Din itself, or Beis Din adopted a position that preceded them that was essentially unanimous, so then the Ravid says there's no way for the later court to overturn the earlier ruling. But if there already existed two opinions, the Merubim and the Yachid, and the Beis Din, let's say the Beis Din voted, and a majority voted X, and there was a minority that voted Y, a later Beis Din has the ability to adopt what is in effect the minority position, and that is sort of an exception to the rule of Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, which is obviously, it's a tremendous loophole, because it's hard to imagine so many decisions that were necessarily rendered unanimously, but, you know, it's always possible that there are such situations that would tie the hands of a future Beis Din, but at least according to the Raivan, a later Beis Din has a much greater degree of flexibility is if there was a minority opinion, and that's why the Mishnah preserves minority opinions. Now, one might argue that the Mishnah doesn't preserve every minority opinion, so even the editors of the Mishnah, or the preservers of Machlokes, who passed on disputes, by definition, by exercising, you know, editorial selectivity, chose which minority opinions would sort of remain part of the canon, which later Batei Din would have the flexibility of adopting, and they chose which minority opinions to sort of disappear into the shadows of history. Okay. But either way, whichever opinion you adopt, as a matter of principle, the Mishnah is very clear that for a later Beis Din to overturn the ruling of an earlier Beis Din, they have to be Gadol b'Chachma over Minyan. That would seem to be pretty straightforward. Now, the question, if that were the end of the discussion, it would be very simple. However, there are a number of Gemaras that sort of introduce gradations or different kinds of situations in which it seems that either you don't need Gadol b'Chachma over Minyan, or perhaps you need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan isn't sufficient. Maybe nothing suffices to overturn an earlier ruling, and that's what I would like to spend our time exploring now. So the Mishnah, the Gemara in Moed Katan, speaks about Yomim Shelifnei Rosh Hashanah. Just like we have Tosefes Shabbos, there's also a mitzvah of Tosefes Shviyas, and for a certain time period before the Shemitah year begins, you weren't allowed to do certain kinds of work in certain kinds of fields. So the question is, what exactly is the source for this din? So the Gemara has a whole discussion about it. The Gemara quotes a machlokas beis Shammai beis Hillel about the details. So they say, my yamim shelifnei Rosh Hashanah, source number 5, kidetnan, ad masai chorshim b'stei ilan er shviyas, how long before the Shemitah year begins are you allowed to plow in a field of trees? How long before the Shemitah begins? They give different time periods, and they're not too far apart. The Gemara continues, Rabban Gamliel, presumably of Yavne, and his Beis Din revisited after the Churban this particular issue, and they decided they did away with this restriction. In other words, you could basically be choresh in Erev Shviyas up until sundown of the 29th day of Elul. So Amar le Rabbi Zeira le Rabbi Abahu, va'amrila Reish Lakish of Yochanan. So some couple of Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael were discussing this issue. One of them said to the other, Rabban Gamliel Beis Dino hechi matzu mevatli takanta de Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. How could they overturn a ruling of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel? V'hatanan. Now, that's a pretty serious question. Whoever was the target of the question, was silent for a moment. He was stunned for a moment at the question. And finally, he came to a senses, Amar lei, emor kach hisnu beinam. Maybe that was part of the condition. Which in itself opens sort of a can of worms. But the suggestion here is that when Beis Din made this takana, when Beis Shammai Beis Hillel made this takana, really exerted the Rabbanon of Tosefes Shviyas, they said that they authorized any other Beis Din wanted to meet if they had the need to overturn it. Okay. That's obviously, it's not that it opens a can of worms in which how do you know when Beis Din made such a ruling? I mean, do you have traditions that are recorded, but this part of the tradition is there like a footnote on the bottom that says that it gives you a time limit or certain types of restrictions? I don't know. But the Gemara Moed Katan certainly fits with the general pattern of that ain Beis Din Yachal Avato Divrei Beis Din Chaver Ela in Kein Gadol Menu B'Chachma Uvaminyan. Now, what type of a din was this? What was the nature of this din? So this seems to have been a Gzeira de Rabbanon, whose purpose, it's not clear, was its purpose so that people don't accidentally violate the Issur D'Oraisa of plowing the Shemitah year, so we have a two-month thing before, or is it some other type of reason for this Gzeira? It's not entirely clear, but it's certainly something that's mid the Rabbanon. One other Gemara in this respect, which sort of delivers the same message, is the question of Prusbel. So the Gemara in Gittin says, that Tashma the Amar Shmuel, source 6, Hapruz Bola Ubana de Dayanahu. It's an, I don't know, elbone is hard to translate. It's the shame, the embarrassment, it's the Achilles heel of the Dayanim. I ayasher chayil avatline. If I could muster the strength, I would do away with Prosbola. So the Gemara says, well, I'm based in Yochel Abathel, Dibre based in Chaveril, and King Gadol, Imanim B'chachma Minyan. And Hillel HaZakeh was the one who instituted Prosbola. Shmuel clearly was not of the same, I would not have seen himself of the same stature as Hillel. So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar, this is what Shmuel meant. I ayasher chayil yosemi Hillel. If I could muster the strength in Torah and be greater in Chachma than Hillel, if I had that strength, I would have done away with Prosbol. Okay, so this is really sort of a consistent theme. Now, what exactly is Prosbol? Prosbol is a funny kind of din. It uproots a Torah law to save a Torah law. Okay, it's not exactly a typical Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. You know, normal Gzeirah D'Rabbanan is, you know, you don't carry from a Carmelist to Rosh HaYachid because you might carry from Rosh HaRabim to Rosh HaYachid. That's a typical Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. Here it's a funny kind. It is Takana D'Rabbanan, but it's an unusual kind of Gzeirah. So if we stopped here, it would seem that, very simple, that the rule of Gadol B'Chachma Minyan applies by all the Inim D'Rabbanan, and it would be very, very simple. However, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah introduces a new category. And that category we often refer to in the shorthand as the Yud Ches Davar. Now, Yud Ches Davar refers to the 18 things that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued over, and Beis Shammai, on a particular day, they went up to visit the Hananya ben Chizkiya ben Garon, who had been in his Aliyah. It's a Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Yomi, we'll get to it probably within a day or two. And in that Mishnah, it says that there were 18 things they argued about. It's not clear which 18 things the Mishnah refers to, but the Gemara speaks about the Yud Ches Davar, which Beis Shammai won. So sometimes Beis Shammai wins. Fine. So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah had said in Avodah Zarah about Shemen Shalachem, that Shemen Shalachem, a non-Jew's oil, and this is olive oil, is osur to consume. That's what the Mishnah had said. And then the Mishnah says that Rebbe Ubeisina, when it's not actually Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, it's his grandson, Rebbe Yehuda Nasiya, overturned the Gezerah of Shemen. And they permitted Shemen, and that's the halacha today. Shemen Shalakum, you know, at least olive oil, cold-pressed olive oil is not a problem. And there's no type of Gezerah that relates to Shemen. So the Gemara says, Vashemen Shalahen, Shemen Rav Amar Daniel Gazer Alav. Rav said that it was actually from Daniel. Daniel, the famous biblical character, he and his Beis Din were gozer against Shemen because they were very concerned. If you read the book of Daniel, even the beginning, Daniel and his friends were not willing to consume the king's food. They ate the salad, as we would say, because they couldn't trust the kashrus. So he was very concerned about eating the food of non-Jews. So he and his Beis Din were gozer on Shemen. So the Gemara says, "V'Shemen Daniel gozer? How can it be? It's not true." V'Amar Bali Avini Nusa Mishmei the Rav. Piton, Vishamnon, Yenon, Uvnosehem, Kula Mishmona Sadavrahin. These four things, Pasakum, Shemenakum, Yenakum, and whatever Benosehem means, are all from the 18 things that Beis Shammai won, the 18 Zeros for Beis Shammai Birech Beis Hillel. Now, so that's not from Daniel. Chitema asa Daniel Gazer velo Kibel. If you want to say that Daniel and his Beis Din were gozer, but the Jewish people didn't accept the Gzeirah, they didn't observe it, so it never took root. The asu tamid in Hillel b'Shammai v'gozer v'kibel, but Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, they tried making the Gzeirah again, and this time it was successful. Imkei my asadu say the Rav. What's the point in Rav telling us? It's irrelevant that Daniel was gozer, although because his Gzeirah never took hold. It was Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Ela Daniel gozer alav v'ir asu inu v'gozer afilu besodem. Okay, so the Gemara says now there were different stages of the Gzeirah. Daniel made a more limited Gzeirah, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel made a more expansive Gzeirah. So now the Gemara asks the question, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Heichi Motzi L'Mishra Takanta Talmidei Shammai V'Hillel, V'atzanan Ein Beis Din Yochel L'Vatel Divrei Beis Din Chaveru, Ela In Kein Gadol Mimenu B'Chachma V'Min. So far, so good. This is what we would have expected the Gemara to ask. The same basic principle. But now things get complicated. V'od, there's another problem. Ha'amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar B'Yochanan B'chol Yochel Levato based in Divrei based in Chavero Chutz Mishmona Asar Davar. By all matters, a Beis Din can overturn another Beis Din's ruling. I presume it means if you have Gadol B'Chachma Minyan, except for the 18 things. Sha'afilu Yavo Eliyahu Uveistino Ein Shomelo. Eliyahu and his Beis Din could come, and presumably there are much more Gadol B'Chachma Minyan, and nonetheless we would totally ignore them. So that's why, and since Shemin is one of the Yudchas Tavar, how could Rabbi Yehuda Anasi permit it? Number one, he wasn't Gadol B'Chachma Maminyan, and number two, it's from the Yudchas Tavar, so it wouldn't matter even if he were Gadol B'Chachma Maminyan. What is this Yudchas Tavar? What? Who says that these things are irrevocable, and why are they irrevocable? So the Gemara seems to give a reason. Amra B'Sharshia, Mata'am. What is the reason? Ho'al U'Pasha Isuro B'Rov Yisrael. Now, the question is, which one of these questions is he answering? Is he answering the first one? Is he answering the second one? Or is he answering both with this particular logic? But he says that the reason why, matam, why is something binding, either the Yudches Dabar eternally binding, or something binding until you have a base in Gadol B'Chachma Maminyan, why is it binding? Because Pashat Yisuro B'Rov Yisrael. But Shemen, though Pashat Yisuro B'Rov Yisrael, the Gzeir Shemen wasn't Nispashta. In fact, when it comes to Pasakum as an example, there are Rishonim who say that Pasakum is completely what do the Balei Tosef sound like that? Because they say Klai Yisrael never really accepted. Okay? We have many kulos by Pasakum. We don't usually tell people straight out that it's mutter, but there are such opinions. There are such opinions. So the Gemara says that Shemen Akum basically wasn't accepted. If the people don't accept the Gzeira on some level, it's not binding. Because in this regard, the legislators derive their power as representatives of the Tzibur, and if the Tzibur doesn't accept it, then the legislation is not binding.
What's the principle called?
Wait on one second. There's a sort of either the same principle or a corollary that the Gemara is about to articulate for this. The Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Yashu Rabosein Ubad Kol Shemen Shlo Pashat Isura Brov Yisrael. They saw that it hadn't spread. The Samchu Rabosein Al Divrei Rabbi Shmuel Amliyav Al Divrei Relezer Bet Sadok Shay Omrim In Gozerin Zera La Tzibur El Inkei Rov Tzibur Yechol Nan Lamavro. That's what's usually quoted. That you don't Beis Din may not institute Zera unless the community is able to observe it. Now there seems to be a I guess. Does the Gemara say it that way, or just say, I assume they waited until the next year because that was the first anniversary? So there's a question whether or not these two are one and the same thing, or these are two separate things. In other words, you could theoretically have a Gzeira that the community is capable of observing but chooses not to do so. In other words, it could be Yeholim Lamabo, but below Pashta. It's hard to imagine it the other way, that something the community is not capable of observing actually being pashta, but even that could be so. It could be you have a gzera that was pashta b'chol Yisrael, and at some point circumstances changed where they could no longer observe it, where it became impractical. Yeah, I'm sorry?
Pashta means decreed?
No, pashta means to spread out. Pashta b'chol Yisrael means it became broadly observed. Okay, so that would be broadly read, not necessarily broadly observed. So the question is, what do you do with the what do you do with these Yudches Dabar? Because this is an entirely new category. It sounds from the Gemara that if you have a Gezerah or something that was Pashta B'chol Yisrael, then it is insufficient to have even a Beis Din that's Gadol B'Chachma Minyan cannot overturn it. Now, when you take a step back, the question is, how do you put these two together? So what does it mean? It means that if a Gzeirah, you can even see it in the Gemara itself, if a Gzeirah was not Pashta B'chol Yisrael, so what do you need in order to overturn it? So if you look at the Gemara, you can't say Gadol B'chachma Maminyan, because Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya overturned the earlier Gzeirah, and he wasn't Gadol B'chachma Maminyan, on the basis, presumably, of Lo Pashta B'chol Yisrael. So I understand that if it's lo pashta b'chol Yisrael, you don't even need Gadol B'chachma of a minyan. On the other hand, if it's pashta b'chol Yisrael, which sounds like the reason for the Yudches Dabar, then no Beis Din can overturn, even Elio Beis Dino can overturn it. So now you're left with the question, where do you need a Gadol B'chachma of a minyan, where Gadol B'chachma of a minyan actually works? You sort of cut the pie in half, and you know, as you have the cases where you don't need Gadol B'chachma of a minyan, cases where Gadol B'chachma of a minyan doesn't help. Where is it that Gadol B'chachma Minyan is necessary and sufficient? That's really the question. That the Gemara, if you just parse the Gemara, becomes readily apparent.
Rabbi, what's the criteria for determining whether it's Pashta or not?
So again, I'll assume that they send out a survey monkey or something like that, and they find out how many people, you know, they do some type of a survey to figure out whether or not people are actually observing a particular din. Okay. So now, That's really a pressing question. The pressing textual question is, what happened to the gap? What comes in the middle? The second question is, what makes these Yudches Davar? Is Yudches Davar just a code word for anything Pashta? Then the statement of Rabbi Yochanan that based in Kibim Vato, everything chutz mishmon asar davar. These are the only 18 zeros in Rabbi Yochanan's time that it achieved such broad circulation. Seems a little bit difficult. What makes the, in other words, really, what makes Yud Ches Davar different than everything else? So there is a Yerushalmi. There is a Yerushalmi on this topic. The Yerushalmi is not entirely clear. But the Yerushalmi on this Mishnah and Shabbos that we're about to do in Daf Yomi, so the Yerushalmi says that if you look right after the Mishnah, the fourth line in Source 8, Lamedcha shekol davar shenostim based in nafshan alav sofa miskayim biyadam kemoshen emar lemoshe b'sinai. So what the Mishnah teaches you, and why we follow Beis Shammai in these 18 things, is anything which based in is nostim nafshan alehem will be miskayim. Now, what does it mean, nostim nafshan alehem? So if you only read this part of the Yerushalmi, and I think there are some Rishonim Acharim who read this way, they ignore the end of the Yerushalmi, it sounds like they worked really hard. They were dedicated, they put in tremendous effort, tremendous amount of thought, and this is what they produced. When you go to the end, of the Sugya, I hope it's not here. Where is it? Oh, I'm sorry, it's the beginning. It's the earlier part. It's in the ellipsis. So Tana Rabbi, the second line in the source, Tana Rabbi Yeshua Onya Talmidei Beis Shammai Amdu Lahem Milmata V'Hayu Hargim Mitalmidei Beis Hillel. Okay? And then we have an addition, Tani Shishimim Adu Vashar Amdu Lahem B'Charavos V'Ramachim. In other words, it sounds like there were physical violence here. It sounds like there were Talmidei Hillel who were killed over this issue, when it sounds like the sword guys, you know, the people with the weapons stayed below, and six guys went up to the attic to brawl. It's not clear whether they were carrying weapons. So when you read this part of the Yerushalmi, and the Rishonim Tosfos quotes this, it sounds like that something was very unusual about these Yud Ches Davar. The Bryce had said that if that day was Kashali Yisrael Kiyom Shanasa Bo Egel, just because they followed Beis Shammai in 18 things, it was as bad as the day they made the Egel. So apparently this Bryce that the Yerushalmi quotes, the Bavli doesn't have it, actually says there was physical violence entailed in this. And therefore, it seems that there was something that when we use the expression Davar Shenosnim based in national love, it sounds to be actually quite literal. Quite literal. And this may actually be a machlokas, I'll be showing him what it meant by that. But already the Yerushalmi suggests that there's something that was, in other words, it's not just all Gzeros and all Pashta, but there was something about the Yud Ches Davar that's somewhat unusual. Okay. One more source in the Gemara, to sort of round out the picture, is the Sugya in Beitza. Now, up until this point, some of you may be familiar with the terminology, Davar Shebeminyan Sarach Minyan Acher Lahatira. Right? That's, in fact, you might be familiar with it because it's on the title of the shir. Now, that's not the Mishnah's terminology note. The Mishnah doesn't say Davar Shebeminyan Sarach Minachal Atira. It says Ein based in Yochel Levato based in Chaver and in Kain Gadol Mimeno B'chachma V'minyan. It should have said Davar Shebeminyan Sarach Minyan Gadol Lahatira. But there is one more source, which is not entirely clear if it's a sort of third category, but again, so far we've seen Gadol B'chachma V'minyan, the Mishnah Adios. We've seen the Yud Ches Davar, where clearly Gadol B'chachma Minyan doesn't help. And now we have something where Davar Shebe Minyan, Tzorach Minyan Acher Latira. So the Gemara Beitza talks about the din of Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah being treated as one day, and some of the chumras that come along with that. The chumra of Beitza Shenolda on the first day can't be eaten on the second day, and so on. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef Omar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came along and he changed the rules on Rosh Hashanah, how you mekabel Eidos HaChodesh, which allowed in theory, it meant that Rosh Hashanah should have once again become like any other Yom Tov Sheni, that it was basically a Safek. In other words, there was a takana made according to the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, that when they had certain problems, because Rosh Hashanah comes out on Rosh Chodesh, it's a unique situation, that they turned the 2 days into one long Kedusha. Once Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did away with those restrictions on Eidos HaChodesh, theoretically it should have reverted to being a regular Sveika D'Yoma. So Rabbi Yosef comes along and says, Achi takanas Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Ve'elach beitza asura. Even after his takana was only for the Eidus and Beis Din, but it didn't undo the chumras of the earlier Beis Din regarding treating Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah as kedusha achas. My taima, have a dover shebe minyan v'chol dover shebe minyan sarach minyan acher la'atiro. And Rabbi Yosef claims, his claim, it's clear from the sugya, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't undo the other zeros. All he did was one particular part. In other words, just because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai changed the nature of how they were mekabel eidus, unless he and his beis din had formally sat down to revoke the gzera, the chumra of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah treated as one, that gzera still remains in place. Why? Because if it was legislated by a beis din, it has to be unlegislated by a beis din. Otherwise, it's still binding. Then he asks, how do I know that davar shemaminyan tzarach minyan achalatiro? The siv leich amar lahem leich amar lahem shuvu lachem la'alechem v'omer b'mshoch hayovel hema yalu v'har. So Moshe Rabbeinu at Maimon Har Sinai, everybody had to separate from their wives at the time of Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, God said to them, shuvu lachem la'alechem, you are now permitted. And the same thing was true about not going up in Har Sinai. The Torah says b'mshoch hayovel hema yalu v'har. So both of these cases, obviously, once the Shekhinah left Har Sinai, once Maimon Har Sinai was done, obviously people should have been able to return to their wives, and obviously people should have been allowed to take a tour of Har Sinai. So the fact that the Torah has to come along and explicitly permit it teaches you that davar shebe minyan tzarach minyan achar la'atiro. And obviously that case, the second minyan for sure, doesn't have to be gadol from the first minyan. That's clear because there's a ribono shelam on both ends. And then they quote a Mishnah. Tnan Karen Revai Hayolam Yushalai Mahalach Yom Echad Lachotzad Vizohi Techuma. It used to be that they wanted to make sure if everybody were to redeem the Maaser Sheni, their fruits, on money and bring the money to Yushalayim, there would be a shortage of fruits in Yushalayim, and there certainly wouldn't be very nice. You wouldn't walk in and see fruits all over the place. So in order to ensure that there would be at least a supply of fruits, they made a takana that you weren't allowed to redeem Maaser Sheni within a certain perimeter around Yushalayim. In HaTorah, until you bring it into the walls, until the mechitzos are koltos, you could redeem the Maaser Sheni. Here, they put a restriction that within a certain distance around Yerushalayim, you weren't allowed to redeem the Maaser Sheni. You had to bring the fruits themselves to Yerushalayim. Now, so the Mishnah gives the boundaries. Eilat min adarum, batrabas min atzofon, lud min amarab, yardin amizrach, v'amar ula v'itemer of achan rabbi yochanan, maitam kedei la'ate yushuke Yerushalayim beperos. V'tanya, and then we have a story in the Braisa, Karen Ravai Hayalol Rabbi Lazar Bemizrach Lod Bitzad Kvar Tevi. So Karen Ravai has the same din as Maaser Sheni in this regard, the same din of Pidyon. So Rabbi Lazar had Ravai, and what happened? Ubike Shlach Kira L'Aniyim. He decided he was going to make it Hefker for the Aniyim. He didn't want to bother having to carry all the fruits to Yerushalayim. Remember, this is post Korban. Instead, he gave it a tzedakah to the Aniyim, let the Aniyim carry it to Yerushalayim. Amr lo Talmid of Rebbe Kvar Nimnu Alecha Chaverecha Avitiru. Your Chaverim were already Omdu l'minyan, nimnu, they had a legislative session, and they were permitted, they did away with the gzera. Why? Because generally speaking, there was no longer aliyah l'regel, so there wasn't so much of a concern to the la'ater shuke Yerushalayim b'peros at the time of the Chagim, and therefore, there was no need for this gzera, and they undid it. Man chaveiracha, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Taima, the reason why Rabbi Lezer, his Talmidim, were telling him you don't have to bring the fruits anymore, you could redeem it yourself, is the Nimnu. Only because Nimnu Chaverecha, because they had another legislative session. Halo Nimnu, lo. Okay. So the Gemara basically goes on to discuss why you need multiple sources, but here the Gemara lays out a principle, Dover Shiva Minyan, Sarach Minyan Acher Latira. Now, one of the very important questions, forget on the Psukim, but ask the question about the one case that's a Drabanan. Namely, Pidyon Maaser Sheni within the certain perimeter of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai u'Beistino were matir the gzera of an earlier Beis Din. Was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai greater in stature than that earlier Beis Din? It's really an important question. Could he have been greater? Some of you might recall the Gemara in Sukkah, and it appears, I think, in Bava Basra as well, that Hillel HaZaken had 80 Talmidim, 30 who were giants, 30 who were less than that, and 20 were Beinonim, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was number 80 in the order. And then the Gemara goes on to list everything that he knew beyond Shas, and all Chachmas Olam. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to have been the minor figure in terms of at least these 80 sages. So the question is, was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gadol b'chachma v'minyan over the Beis Din that he was undoing their legislation? I'm not going to answer that question right now, but that's a question that the Rishonim probably dispute.
Why are you keep going with Gadol v'Chachma? No one talks about maybe the fax chains.
Oh, so now you have to ask a different... One of the questions that will be spoken about is what happens if the reason for the gzeira no longer applies? Hold on. We'll get to that. The Gemara itself never explicitly, you know, introduces that idea. The only thing that can be said is that this Gemara in Beitza deals with three different scenarios where what happens is exactly what you're talking about, which is the reason was no longer relevant. The two psukim, the cases of the psukim are cases where once the Shekhinah has left Har Sinai, there's no longer kedusha, there's no longer reason to separate. And once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was no concern about, you know, decorating the shuk, the shuk of Yerushalayim, the peros. Right? Agreed. So it will be spoken about and discussed by the Rishonim.
We have the same thing, and I want to get it, but the second day younger. Facts changed, aren't
they? I understand. Well, yes, that one may have already changed in the time of the Gemara, but yes. So that would be fall under a similar category. So now, if you look at the Gemara itself, unless you argue that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was Gadol b'Chachma uv Minyan from the earlier Beis Din, it would seem that we have three categories in the Gemara. We have the category of Davar Minyan Sarach Minyan Achar Latiro. Doesn't have to be Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. Then you have a Beis Din Yochel Levatol Divrei Beis Din Chavera Elin Kein Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, where you need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, but Gadol b'Chachma Minyan is sufficient. And then you have the Yud Ches Davar, in which no Beis Din, even Elio Beis Dino, could not overturn such a gzeira. So the question is, how do you put these pieces together? So Tosus and Gittin is the first one to explicitly observe this stira. I gave you the Tosus Arash here. So Tosus presents the problem, particularly because he was bothered by the fact that presumably by Prisbol, since Prisbol was good for everybody, it was good for the poor people who could borrow money, it was good for the rich people who wouldn't lose their money, so Tosus says presumably Prisbol was Pashta B'chol Yisrael. And if that's the case, why does the Gemara imply that if only was Shmuel were Gadol b'Chachma of a minion from Hillel, Shmuel could have undone the Takana of Prisbol? That's the question. So really Tosus is posing all the sugyas together, and he presents three possible answers. I'm not going to, in the interest of time, I'm not going to read inside, but you certainly, I would encourage you, you know, at a future point to take a look. Possibility number one, Tosus suggests, is that there are, in fact, not one criteria mentioned in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but two criteria. In other words, Tosus started out by assuming that it all depends upon Pashta. If something is Pashta, then it's like the Yud Ches Davar, and no Beis Din can overturn it. If it's low Pashta, then you don't even need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. Hence, where do you find the middle ground? So Tosus said, you know what? No, the Gemara actually said two different things. One consideration of Gzeira is whether Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, but the second consideration is whether Rovat Tzibur Yechol Lamodah. So Tosus says as follows. He does a little arithmetic here. He says that if both conditions are present, number one, it's Yechol Lamodah, and number still Yechol Lamodah, and number two, it was Pashta b'Chol Yisrael. So then Tosus says that's what the Yud Ches Davar stands for, and no Beis Din can overturn that Gzeira. If one of the factors is present, either Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, but let's say they can no longer, the Tzibur can't handle it anymore, or even if they could handle it, but it wasn't Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, so Tosus says, that requires Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, but they can overturn it. And if both factors are absent, if it's low Pashta, and ain't Rovat Tzibur Yechol Lamabal, so Tosus says, that's Davar Shebeminyan, Tzarech Minyan Achar Latira, but you don't even need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. Tosus didn't like that for various reasons, so he goes on to suggest two other answers. Number one is that Prisbol is an exception because it's a Davar Shebamamon. By Davar Shebamamon, Beis Din has much greater latitude. I'm not going to explore that issue. It's certainly, the principle is certainly a correct one. That's true generally throughout. If you compare Choshen Mishpat and Eben HaEzer, that comparison certainly becomes very clear. But he then proposes what is sort of the third answer that's typically quoted, which is as follows, that really the Yud Ches Davar is the exception to the rule. He points to the Yushalmi, and the Yushalmi says that these Yud Ches Davar were unique because there was bloodshed. So anything else which doesn't fall under the category having bloodshed, so would be subject to the rule of Gadol b'Chachma uv Minyan, even if Pashat Yisur b'Chol Yisrael, even if it's the entire community accepted it would be sufficient for a Gadol b'Chachma Minyan to overturn such a gzeira, unless it was the Yud Ches Davar. And the Yud Ches Davar are literally only 18 things. Tosus, I don't think explicitly here, deals with the question of when do you not even require Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. There are many ways of dealing with that particular issue. Now, the Rambam, perhaps the most interesting presentation for many, many reasons, The Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, and this is source number 11, basically presents the following distinction. He presents sort of three categories. The first one, which is the most astounding one, which would merits a shiur in its own right, and maybe more than that. The Rambam says that it based in, I should say like this, based in has two functions, the Sanhedrin HaGadol. One of them is the legislature, one of them is legislative, and the other is interpretive. Legislative implies that something didn't exist before, and based in creates a new gezeira, takana, minhag. Interpretive means that Beis Din is not legislating anything new. Interpretive is really what the Torah describes in Parsha Shoftim. If you have a shayla, you're not sure what the halacha is, you go to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din has to rule. And sometimes they don't know what the rule is, so they have to interpret the text. They have to use based upon dinim they've received, and they have to use midah, shatar, and adreshes behen. And those you would think are the most significant and powerful dinim, those are things that we typically consider the oraisa. The Rambam writes in Halacha Aleph that any Beis Din can overturn a previous Beis Din's interpretation. In other words, by an interpretation de oraisa, any Beis Din in any generation, any Sanhedrin in any generation, has the power to overturn the interpretation of an earlier Beis Din. In other words, if the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi thought that you should read the Pasuk in Chumash differently than Yoshua ben Nun's Beis Din, and it would produce a different outcome on a din de oraisa, then they are allowed and obligated to follow their own reading. That is ve'elah shofet asheya bayim amahem. It's an astounding, astounding statement. That seems to be the case of Davar Shebeminyan, Tzorech Minyan Achal Atira, or one of the examples. Then the Rambam continues and says, and it's the difference is very subtle between Halacha Beis and Gimel. I have to confess, for years, it's the first time I've given shiur on this topic, for years, I had learned a little bit of this with Rav Shechter years ago, and I read this Rambam multiple times, and I had no idea what he was talking about, because he seems to talk about the exact same thing in Halacha Beis, where he says you need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, and Halacha Gimel, where he says no Beis Din can overturn the Din. And after reading it a few more times, I finally think I understand what the Rambam means. The Rambam says that if you have a Gzeira, or a Takana, or a Minag, even if its time is no longer relevant, provided that it spread out, it was accepted by the community. If it's not a gzeira that we're afraid you're going to trample on Torah law, but it's a general type of takana gzeira for the betterment of society. Percival is certainly an example of that. Shemen, it's not clear how Shemen exactly fits in this, but there are many kinds of takanos, whether they're dinim like an institution, Chanukah, the Rabbanon, all sorts of, even gzeiros, which are not exactly a fence, that if we let you violate it, you're going to cross the fence and violate Torah law. By all those types of things, the Rambam says that you need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan, even if the time no longer applies, but provided that it was Pashta b'Chol Yisrael. The Rambam presumably would say, I don't think he articulates this explicitly, that if it wasn't Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, then you don't need Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. That's Shem Shalachim, that's Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah being mounted the early Zera. But if it's Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, even if the reason is irrelevant, you require Gadol b'Chachma Minyan. But when he gets to Halacha Gimel, that we can read, Bamed dvarim amurim, bidvarim shelo asru osan, kidei laso siyog l'torah, ela kishar dine torah. Awal dvarim shereo beisdin, ligzar ula osran, laso siyog, im posha isuran b'chol Yisrael, im beisdin gadol acher, yochol okran l'atiran, afilu haya gadol men harishonim. So when you read Beis and Gimel together, you have the difference is very subtle, but the Rambam claims that things that are a siyog to prevent direct violation of Torah law, which are pashta b'chol Yisrael, are irrevocable. Things that are gzeiros, takanos, menhagos, which are not of that nature, you need, as long as they're pashta b'chol Yisrael, require gadol b'chachma of a minyan. Finally, the Ravid comes along, and he gets pretty upset at the Rambam on two counts. But the Ravid himself leaves the hole in the middle. He leaves what we might call the donut hole. The Ravid says, number one, there's no way, what do you do with the Gemara and Beitza? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Ravid assumes, the Kesef Mishnah disputes this, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was not greater than his predecessors. He was certainly inferior. He's the least of the 80 Talmidim. How can Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, according to the Rambam, if the takana of not redeeming Maser Sheni within a certain perimeter of Yerushalayim was Pashta B'chol Yisrael, and it sounds like it was, how could Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai undo that if he wasn't Gadol B'chachma over Minyan? So the Ravid, because of that, posits that when the time is no longer relevant for a gzeira, then the requirement of Gadol B'chachma Minyan falls by the wayside. That's what the Ravid says. That's very nice, and that would certainly fit very, it would work very well for Tosfos. It would provide Tosfos with this third category. But the Ravid himself creates a problem for himself, Because when the Rambam says that Gadol b'Chochma v'Minyan works, the Raiva turns around and is masik and says, what are you talking about? If it's Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, because the Rambam said, you need Gadol b'Chochma v'Minyan when it's Pashta b'Chol Yisrael. The Raiva said, if it's Pashta b'Chol Yisrael, that's called the Yud Ches Davar. That's all that matters. That defines Yud Ches Davar. Pashta b'Chol Yisrael. Now the Raiva himself never really explains what happens, where's the middle part? In other words, the Ravid has said that if it's Pashto B'chol Yisrael, that's the Yud Ches Davar, no Beis Din can overturn it. For if it's Bat Latav, then any Beis Din can overturn it. The Ravid himself never explains where you sort of get the middle category. But what emerges then, between these three Shitas of Rishonim, to try to at least summarize, the definition of Yud Ches Davar, which I think is the easiest way to start, there are three different definitions of Yud Ches Davar. Tosa says Yud Ches Davar is only those 18 things because of all the bloodshed that was involved. Okay, 18 and no more. The Ravid says, maybe in accordance with the simple reading of the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, that anything which is Pashta B'chol Yisrael, and I presume he would add in, and the reason is still relevant, the Ravid says, that's called Yud Ches Davar, no base that can overturn. And the Rambam says that reason relevant or not, if something is Pashto B'chol Yisrael and it's a siyog shelolav or al divrei Torah, so the Rambam says that's called Yud Ches Davar. When do you require, that's what, those are the gzeros that nobody can overturn. When do you require Gadol B'chachma over Minyan? So according to the Rambam, whenever a gzeret hakan or minag was Pashto B'chol Yisrael, but it's not a siyog shelolav or al divrei Torah, so the Rambam says that you require Gadol b'chachma v'minyan, but Gadol b'chachma v'minyan suffices. According to the Balei HaTosos, they don't really make a clear distinction, but one might very well say for the Balei HaTosos that something that is Pashta b'chol Yisrael is not from the Yud Ches Davar, but any other gzeira, and where the reason is still relevant, so the Balei HaTosos say you require Gadol b'chachma v'minyan. The Ravid is a question mark. Where does he require Gadol b'chachma of a minyan? If you look in the Lecha Mishnah, he tries to salvage one of Tosus's answers for the Ravid, the first answer in Tosus. And then the third category, when do we say that simply a davar shebeminyan tzarach minyan achar la'atiro, but that is sufficient? Well, according to the Ravid, when the Tam is batla, according to the Rambam, either by dinim doraisa, that a Beis Din chooses to interpret differently, or when lo pashta b'chol Yisrael, and I presume that according to Tosfos, certainly if it's lo pashta b'chol Yisrael, you don't need Gadol b'chachma minyan, and maybe they would even hold like the Ravid, but you can't tell, that if batla tamo, you also don't require Gadol b'chachma over minyan, it's simply sufficient to have another minyan acher. Okay. So that leads me to what perhaps is the most interesting question for us. That's all very nice. But to quote our slichos, the part that I think everybody goes to sleep in after Mari Kohen, so the Paitan says that kol eile biyos ha-heichal ha-yisodosav u-mikdash ha-kodesh ha-mechonosav. That's very nice. We had all these things when there was a Beis HaMikdash, when there was a Sanhedrin HaGadol functioning. One of the issues that I'm not going to go into detail about, but really is an important discussion, is what is the definition of a davar shebeminyan? What constitutes a Sanhedrin? Do you have to have real smicha? Does it have to be a Beis Din HaGadol in the formal sense? A Beis Din HaGadol means the Sanhedrin sitting in the Lishkas HaGozes. And those two questions obviously have enormous ramifications, because if you require smicha in order to be a formal Beis Din, a Darush HaMinyan, then basically all the Amoraim in Babel and the latest parts of the Yerushalmi is not a Darush HaMinyan. So the question now is really why anyone who studies Psak Halacha in the traditional sense knows that while one might reluctantly do so, one can argue on the Achronim, on the Shulchan Aruch, even on the Rishonim, even on the Gonim, but you can't argue on the Bavli. You can't argue on the Bavli. And the question is, why is the Talmud Bavli binding? Now, of course, from a certain vantage point, the answer might be simply, maybe in fact is, this may be what the Rambam says, maybe historical. It may just be that the Bavli became accepted at a certain point, not through any formal legislative process, and that's all there is to it. And really, it's in effect Minhag Yisrael. Now, really, you'd expect something that's such a central issue in halacha should have received much discussion amongst the Rishonim. But to the best of my knowledge, there isn't a single reason given for the fact that the Talmud Bavli is binding, until the Kesef Mishnah came along. The Rambam just says it in a passing reference in the Hakdamah to the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam in source 13 says that basically you can argue on Takanas HaGaonim because it wasn't dispatched to B'chol Yisrael, it wasn't accepted by all Klal Yisrael, but the Talmud Bavli was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. You can't argue on the Gemara. If your practice is against the Gemara, your practice is wrong and it should be changed. The question is why? So the first source that I'm aware of to even attempt to grapple with this issue is an unbelievable Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam Halach Aleph. And the Kesef Mishnah writes, if you skip down to four full lines from the end, in the middle of the line, the Im Tomar, it's right after a period, in source 14. So the Kesef Mishnah just pointed out how the Rambam said that by all the real dinim, the big dinim, the dinim d'oraisa, any Beis Din in any generation can overturn a previous ruling, even if it's lesser in stature, lesser in chachma and minyan. So the Kesef Mishnah asks, Im Tomar, Im came amaylo pligi amoroi atanoi. Why didn't the Amoraim argue on the Tanoi? The ha b'chol duchta, in every place you ever learn in Gemara, makshina la amora mi masnisen o mi baraisa, the tzarach lomar ano da amri ki haitana. Anytime you ask a kasha on an amora from a baraisa, from a tana, what does he have to do? He has to say, oh, I hold like the other tana. V'im lo yomar kein kashale. And if not, he's basically, we would say he's abschlugged, he's rejected. According to the Rambam's view, there's nothing that should have bound the Amoraim not to argue, not to dispute the opinions of the Tanoim. The Efshar Lomar, it's possible, and notice, the Kesef Mishnah doesn't have a source, it's a suggestion, Shemiyom Hasimas HaMishnah Kimu V'Kiblu Shedoros HaAchronom Lo Yachliku Al HaRishonim V'Chein Osu Gamba Hasimas HaGemara Shemiyom Shenechtem Alonitem Rishos L'Shem Adam Lachliku Al. The Kesef Mishnah, without quoting it, has essentially adopted what I think is the position of the Rambam in his Hakdamah to the Yad, where basically it was the Minhag Yisrael. It was Niskabla B'chol Yisrael. In other words, it wasn't, in a certain sense, you would say, you might argue in Lamdish terms that the Beis Din as a legislature derives its power from the Tzibur, and normally, it's obviously, imagine getting all of Klal Yisrael to sit down to a legislative session and to come to a vote. That would be highly impractical. It's hard enough with the Sanhedrin. But the Sanhedrin, when it legislates, represents the community. If the community, in this case, has adopted the maskanos of Ravina Ravashi and maskanos of the Talmud Bavli and its misadrim, so then that is considered the Dover Shiva Minyan. And I want to take a minute. I want to mention a couple of other opinions about this particular issue, but I think that the opinion of the Rambam would actually explain a very, very central question in terms of psak halacha and change in halacha. If you look in, there's a wonderful collection of sources. It's called Hamachlokes B'Halacha. It's two big, thick red volumes, which is just a collection of sources. So there's a section on there, Mekor Tokfo Shel Talmud Bavli. But if you look there, I knew the Kesef Mishnah before looking at that, but I knew that there would be sources there. And I looked there, and basically everything is after the Kesef Mishnah, fundamentally, and it all revolves around a discussion of the Kesef Mishnah, whether you accept it or reject it. There is an exchange of materials between Rav Elchanan Wasserman and Chazon Ish about this particular issue. And there are a couple of other sources. Very briefly, the other, I would say, two sort of standard approaches that were adopted was, number one, the Chazon Ish's position that basically in order to overturn, that the Bavli was really somehow it's considered Dover Shiva Minyan, and even if it's not a technical Dover Shiva Minyan, overturn their ruling, you have to be Gadol B'Chachma. And there's no way we could possibly be Gadol B'Chachma, and therefore those rulings are binding. It raises its own series of problems, because if that's the case, presumably you might say you also can't argue on the Rishonim and the Gaonim, because I don't think today we would claim that we're greater. You know, Achronim is one thing, but to claim that we can argue on the Rishonim, but principally the Achronim did it. But that's his position. Rav Elchanan's position seems to be that really, and historically this might be debatable, is that there was a convocation at the time of Rav Ashi, even though you don't have smicha, it doesn't matter. If the Rov of Gedolei Yisrael, Rov Tamid HaChacham Yisrael, get together and they take a vote on something, so then that is binding. Now, what he left implied, although he denies having said it because the Chazon Ish attacked him for it, was that if all the Rabbanim and Klal Yisrael would get together today, their words would also be binding as a Dover Shiva Minyan, and they would be able to overturn a din of the Gemara. The Chazon Ish at least thought that's what he said, and totally was aghast at that. And Rav Elchanan, in his response to the Chazon Ish, said, "No, I never said any such thing in my entire piece on this particular issue." But that's sort of a third approach, which says that the Bavli, the Mishnah, and then the Bavli really were a Dover Shiva Minyan, because you don't need smicha and you don't need the din of Beis Din HaGadol for that. I think, however, that this one central problem that we often discuss in terms of halachic change that fits very nicely with the Rambam's, with the position of the Rambam and the Kesef Mishnah as he explains it. You know that there are a lot of dinim that we don't follow that are in the Mishnah of the Gemara, particularly Ashkenazim. Sephardim a little less so, but you know, a few days ago, last week, so many of you, those who don't have, as someone accused me of having ice water running through my veins, many of you danced on Simchas Torah. But you know that the Mishnah in Beitzah says that Eim Isakim, Eim Itatim, Eim Merakim. It's very clear it's Aser. The Gemara gives the reason, Shem Yisakim and Klishir, period.
What's the reason?
You might fix musical instruments. Okay? That's very nice. So, and period. That's the end of the discussion. There
you
are many...
I'm sorry. Why can't you?
Because you might come to fix musical instruments. If you have singing, if you have clapping and dancing and so on, so you might come to do that. That's why you're not allowed to do so. It's also why you're not allowed to play a musical instrument on Shabbos Yom Tov, because you might fix the instrument if it breaks. Okay. So that is the din of the Gemara. It's cited by the Rambam. It's cited by the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, period. But as you know, especially in Ashkenaz, I expect many Sephardim today also, we dance on Simchas Torah, we'll dance on other occasions also, we might clap our hands on Shabbos Yom Tov. Why is that permitted? And Kahina v'Kahina, there are many, many dinim like this. Where it's nice that we may think the reason doesn't apply, but it doesn't really matter. That's not the way the halacha works. Even if the reason doesn't apply, even the rabbi agrees, you need a minyan acher, latira, you still need another beis din to be mati. So there have been different suggestions that are offered for this, but over having thought about this question for a long time and having at least a limited data set, I think the answer is actually quite simple. If you think about this particular issue of not dancing in Yom Tov, Tosu says the reason why we dance, Tosu Meita, is because we're not bikiyim in b'tikun klishir. We're not such experts in fixing musical instruments. I mean, if our instruments broke, we wouldn't be able to fix them. So let me ask you a question. I'll ask you two questions. Number one, I'm sorry? Number one, are we allowed to use musical instruments because of that on Yom Tov and Shabbos? Nobody said that. Number two, I want to know how this came about. Do you think that on one cold, dreary morning in northern France, as the fall season was coming, the Balei HaTosfos was sitting around the table in the Beis Medrash and said, you know, things are really dull on the Simchas Torah. Why don't we liven it up? Let's have hakapos and dancing. I don't think so. That's not what happened. This was not legislative change driven by a legislature, driven by Talmidei Chacham. Okay. This was a minhag that developed by the community, and at some particular point, the Balei HaTosfos said, and you can read more about this, Professor Jacob Katz and all his students, the Balei HaTosfos said, if the community is doing this, and it doesn't seem to be leading to any terrible consequences, it must be okay. And Tosfos sat down and said, well, you know why it's okay? Because the whole reason for the Gzeira is Koshem Yisake and Klishir, and it's not really relevant to us in our setting. Now, I think when you look at all dinim, almost every dinim, it's very common in the Balei HaTosfos, and it makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So you will see that all these things where we don't follow the Gemara are always post facto. They're never someone sits down in advance and says, okay, we can do away with this particular din because the reason doesn't apply. No, it's always justifying communal practice after the fact. Once Klal Yisrael, once observant Klal Yisrael is doing something, and then we can sort of explain it away, that's what you'll find that the Balei HaTosfos and other Rishonim and the Acharonim do.
So
I think that
what stops Klal Yisrael from organizing and putting the word out there that we want to change the minhag?
Because we can't get, for starters, we can't get along. But I would just say, I don't know, looking forward, how change happens, but I know looking backwards how change has happened. Now the question is, why? That's very nice, but what is that? Why should the Bavli not be binding? Why should we pay attention? So I think the answer is very simple. Davar sheba minyan sarach minyan achel atira. But what makes the Talmud Bavli binding in the first place? And I might even argue, to take the extreme position, any gezeira from the Gemara after, you know, from Rav and Shmuel onward, if it's only in the Bavli, and maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but you might even argue that post Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, certainly once you get to Usha, it's not clear how much of a real Sanhedrin there was. So there might have been Xeris the Rabbanan, but it's not clear how much of a formal, there was certainly not a Beis Din HaGadol. From the year 30 and onward, there was no Beis Din HaGadol in Lashkas HaGaza. So it could be that everything that we have since then is a much lower level Darush HaBeminyan, and especially the bindingness of the Talmud Bavli is Minog Yisrael, Klal Yisrael accepted it, and if Klal Yisrael has now said, but this particular din we don't observe, so Darush HaBeminyan, Tzarech Minyan Acher Latira. I don't know, but that's, to me, that seems to be an obvious way of explaining how we have incorporated some of the changes that we have actually accepted.
What
questions?
About the Yerushalmi versus Bavli?
So I left one source on the sheet. It's a famous riff at the end of Erevin. He doesn't explain why the Bavli is binding per se, but he explains why the Bavli is binding over the Yushalmi. He claims that the Bavli had the Yushalmi, the Sadrei Bavli have the Yushalmi, and therefore Hilchasa Kavasrai. They saw what it was said in the Yushalmi. Sometimes they accepted it, sometimes they rejected it. But that in itself, it explains why the Bavli is binding over the Yushalmi, but it highlights the problem that the normal principle is Hilchasa Kavasrai. You always follow the later authority, you always follow the contemporary authorities. So that's nice why the Bavli is binding over the Yushalmi, but why is the Bavli itself binding over the Achronim?